So many of you have reached out asking about our trip to Disney. Well, first of all, thank you so much for asking. So glad to be back. I've missed you all so, so very much. You never do have enough time in Disney, but that's just me personally. Disney was magical. I mean, what do you expect? It's the most magical, happiest place on earth. Chase discovered the Magic Kingdom classics like It's a Small World, the spinning teacups, the African Safari and Animal Kingdom, as well as some brand new rides like the Alien Saucers in Toy Story Land and Mickey and Minnie's Train Ride that replaced the Great Movie Ride in Hollywood Studios. Both excellent. So personally, we were very happy to be back at Disney. We were very sad to come home yesterday only because we were leaving sunny Florida for freezing rain. But also, who doesn't love being around Mickey Mouse? I won't go into the personals of, like, you know, what I thought worked and didn't work at Disney. Like, I think Disney's being very creative. I think, you know, if you can't meet and talk and hug your favorite characters, I thought they did a good job of having like constant parades so Chase could see the characters live and really blow his mind. But it didn't feel like they were torturing him. Like, we're here, but you can't touch us. You can't come near us. They kept moving. So Chase kind of was like, oh, it's a parade. So I could see them. This is awesome. But it wasn't the same as like standing really far away and just like waving from afar because Chase wouldn't be able to handle that. So I think Disney is getting creative and I love that. But I do find that Disney is kind of cheating the system a little bit. And I'm going to kind of dive into that. First of all, plane rides. A lot of you talked about plane rides. Even if you are not going to Disney, if you're going somewhere else, you have a plane ride in the works in the next couple of months. Let me just tell you this, okay? I am not discouraging people to get on planes. That is not what I'm doing here. I certainly don't want to be the person who tears down commercial flights. We already know our airplanes and the airline industry is suffering tremendously. That being said, I did not feel comfortable on the flights. I did find that they were cleaner than I've ever remembered a flight being. And I have to say, in 20 years, I have never, ever, 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 and this is not an exaggeration, I have never been on a flight that I did not get sick, where I didn't get a stuffy nose, or I didn't get a sore throat, or I didn't get a cough or something. I've always come off of a plane getting sick. This was the first time in, I think, 20 years that I literally got nothing. So it does reflect the fact that they are cleaning the planes. And I could see them cleaning the planes. Like, it looked cleaner. You know how psychotic I am. It looked cleaner. It felt cleaner. I felt good about being on a plane. Here's what I didn't like. So we took JetBlue. Delta, I know, is still blocking off those middle seats. So that's really nice. Like, my sister flew Delta and she felt really comfortable. We were on JetBlue. JetBlue has stopped blocking the middle seats for social distancing. We had 32 rows packed to the max. Those commercial flights were packed. There was not a seat empty. So first of all, you are in very close quarters. I didn't really like that. I don't like the fact that they're not blocking anything on JetBlue, at least. And it sounds like a lot of other commercial flights aren't either. But also, I hate the idea of, like, that's fine that you're going to make two-year-olds wear masks for a 2.5-hour flight. But at the same time, when they're serving all the snacks and the drinks and everything, everyone's taking their masks off to now eat and drink and be merry, basically. So for a good 30, 45 minutes, people don't have their masks on. That entire flight, basically, did not have a mask on. And I looked. You know, I'm not going to get on here and give you false information. I got up with Chase at one point just to walk the rows so he could just kind of walk around. And I saw the majority of the flight without a mask on because they were eating and they were drinking. And you can't possibly do that with a mask on. And I thought, this just seems disgusting to me. Just because, how do you allow 32 rows worth of people, that's six people per row, to not have masks on at the same time in very close quarters? That doesn't seem very COVID friendly. And then at the end of the flight, they're supposed to call you up in sections to get off the flight. No one does that. Everyone gets up at the same time. It's a complete cluster. It's a joke. So my recommendation to people is, unless you have your COVID vaccine or you have COVID immunity, I personally did not feel comfortable on a flight. I said to Derek, I said, thank God we have COVID immunity. As soon as it's up at the end of the week, you will not catch me dead on a flight. I'm sorry. I will not be getting on a commercial flight until I have my COVID vaccine. And honestly, until I know that the rest of the nation, we have 70% population vaccinated, I will not put Chase on a flight. Not going to do it. We'll be driving places. I'm sorry. It was just too close quarters for me. As far as getting down to Disney, a lot of you asked about the crowds. So we talk a lot about Disneyland versus Disney World, the fact that Disneyland's not even open at this point. It's been a year. There are some rumblings, some rumors that they're going to start with opening at a very small capacity. A California Adventure, which is part of the Disneyland properties. They still haven't confirmed that yet. But at this point, Disney's kind of cheating the system a little bit. So they're very sneaky. Disney says it's at a 35% capacity, right? It tells you that they only allow crowd sizes up to 35%. I'm not buying it. So I talked to my brother, who, of course, is a cast member. He can't, you know, he can't speak ill of his company or he'll get fired. But in my sneaky reporter ways of asking different questions and getting my answers, I basically found out from multiple people who work on property that what Disney is doing is for their two most high trafficked parks. So that would be Hollywood Studios, which has Star Wars Land and Toy Story Land. And then Magic Kingdom, of course, the most classic of all. They're allowing close to 50% capacity. Okay, so they are allowing well above the amount of people they should be. And at their other two parks, Animal Kingdom and Epcot, which Epcot is under construction, the majority of the park is under construction, not the walking around the worlds, but the like center of Epcot is under construction. It's a complete cluster there. And Animal Kingdom, which has eliminated all of its shows at this point, they're at about a 10% capacity. So you see what they're doing there? They're taking all four parks and they are averaging a 35% capacity. So don't be fooled. The crowd sizes were a joke. They were incredibly, they were very high capacity. So what we did, you know, because I have some insider knowledge of Disney, we would go like first thing in the morning. We went for what I call a rope drop, which means you go when the park first opens. They'll tell you it opens at 9 o'clock, but we'd get there around 8 and they will let you in an hour early. So we would go with Chase first thing in the morning to Hollywood and to Magic Kingdom, get on a bunch of rides. And then around 10:30, 11 o'clock, we left. I did not feel comfortable. We left, again, even with COVID immunity, I was like, I'm not messing around here, not with my kid. So we went home and we would spend the afternoons there. Either he would take a nap, he'd get in the pool, whatever. And then we'd go back out in the evening when the numbers start to die down again. But I mean, I could give you a full breakdown review. Anybody who does have a personal question, I know a lot of you emailed me over the last 4 days or messaged me on social media. If you have any personal questions, you have a trip booked in the next few weeks, next couple of months, or you're debating whether or not to go, I can answer your questions directly. You can email me, you can Facebook message me, whatever you want to do. I will answer your personal questions. But I would say the overall review was, if I didn't have my COVID immunity, I probably would have waited. That's the honest to God truth. If I did not feel comfortable with the fact that I already have the antibodies and my husband has them and my son has them and the rest of my family has them, I don't think you would have caught me in Disney for a while. Not at least until we get the vaccination. That would be my, in a quick second, recommendation is, if you don't have it, definitely don't get on a plane. And if you don't have the vaccine, I really wouldn't go to Disney World. This is so not the time to go. I don't know. That's just my recommendation. Let's actually head into Stamford now, where we will find Mayor David Martin on the line with us. Hey, Mayor, how are you?
Good morning, Melissa. I am pretty good because we didn't have a huge sheet of ice to wake up this morning. That's a relief.
Yes, right? I know. I felt the same exact way when I let the dogs out at 3 o'clock this morning. I thought, please don't let me slip and fall. That's just the way to start my week off. And it didn't happen. I was very happy about that.
There you go. You know, every now and then you get a tiny little break.
Yes, exactly. And we'll take it. We'll take it. Now, this is where I don't feel like we're getting the break that I think we're all looking for, and that is the COVID vaccine rollout. I know that Stamford has done such an excellent job of getting people their appointments and helping people to get their appointments. And it's been really great to see Stamford as a model. In fact, Governor Lamont called out Stamford when I had him on the last time he was on the show, and he was very proud and applauding Stamford's work. What are your thoughts, Mayor, this morning, though? We hear about the first case of the COVID variant that was first detected in South Africa. We don't know where in Fairfield County it was detected. It was someone from Fairfield County now being treated in New York City. And I'm not creating news here. I don't know if this person lives in Stamford or close by. But, I mean, it is close enough to your area. That what were your thoughts when you heard about this?
Well, you know, I've been I'm not a medical professional. I play one sometimes, but I'm not a doctor. So, you know, you're hearing my speculation, and if you recognize it's my speculation, and it's informed speculation, but you know, I've been nervous about these variants, and mm-hmm. will the variants spread out and beat us to the punch with the vaccine? Mm-hmm. And my understanding is that the vaccines are generally very, very good against many of the variants, but the South African variant has some ability, not a lot of ability, but some ability to overcome some of the vaccines and overcome some of the previous, if there is any resistance buildup by somebody who's got the disease. Mm-hmm. So it is a cause of concern, particularly because it can spread so rapidly. And I think the CDC was saying something like these variants will be the majority of the strains here by mid-March, something like that.
Yeah, I think I read that too. I think Dr. Fauci said something like that. Yeah, I think you're correct.
Yeah, they spread faster. If they spread mm-hmm. faster and more easily, then that's going to be a problem. So what have I done personally? I'm doing double masking. The CDC also released a study saying, hey, double masking helps. So I wear one of those blue kind of pseudo-hospital masks, and then mm-hmm. I wear a City of Stamford mask over it, and they're different materials, and they tend to get a little tighter fit overall. Better protection for me and better protection should I be passing this virus on, which, of course, I am not, but in case I am, because I don't know about
sure.
it, you know, it helps protect those around me. Mm-hmm. That's one thing I can do. And meanwhile, listen, I don't need to tell you or our listeners, we're all waiting for the supply of vaccine to increase. Mm-hmm. And I was on a call Friday with the state about the vaccine supplies and the programs we've got in Stamford. I was on a call, a multi-hour call yesterday about the same topic. And it's the overall quantity of vaccine. Mm-hmm. And Stamford Hospital, let's see, Stamford Hospital was doing about 700 a day vaccines. That's first doses. And then because we had a couple of snowstorms, you may have heard about that. We had a couple of snowstorms.
I think I experienced a little bit of that, yeah.
And the other thing is the state said very clearly that we had some people coming from New York and, in fact, from Pennsylvania and Tennessee and Texas coming into this area who were coming to the hospital. I'm sure they were coming to the Greenwich vaccine points, and I'm sure they were coming across from Massachusetts or Rhode Island to those areas.
Sure.
But they said, hey, we get our supply in Connecticut. We can only serve Connecticut residents. So they were turning people away who had snuck into the appointment system who were not Connecticut residents. So between the two, they actually had some more vaccine, and the hospital has ramped up its vaccination program to I don't want to say burn off, maybe that's not the right word, but they were actually doing more about 1,100 to 1,200 a day to make up for the couple of days where they had, you know, close to 700 or 650 of appointments that couldn't be made because we were in the middle of the snowstorm.
Right.
So that's the capacity that they've got at Stamford Hospital. We also have CHC, who has a clinic at Fifth Street, and I think they're doing about 50 a day. And then they've got Monday through Friday, they've got a drive-through at the old Lord and Taylor site that they can do about 200 to 300 a day. I think they have more capacity. And listen, Stamford Hospital in the city, we're ready to open another facility, provided we can get an assurance that we can get somewhere in the neighborhood of 11,000 doses a week at a minimum.
And we could
go well beyond that, but vaccine supply is a problem.
Yeah.
And the state, you know, I'm reading between the lines here, but I think the state is getting about, 5% more vaccine a month than it was before, but it also has to give the second doses.
Right.
So the number of first doses is creeping. In Stamford, we now have more than half of our 75 years and older population vaccinated.
Wow.
And we're working on the 65 plus. And I, as of yesterday, there were a few appointments available at Stanford Health. So any of your listeners, if they're 65 or older, mm-hmm. And they want a vaccination, then I'm going to tell them, hey, go to stanfordhealth.org, and somewhere on that website, you should be able to find the link to the vaccination so that you can get registered, or you can come to our website at stanfordct.gov, and off the front page of our website, there'll be a link, and you can see how to get to Stanford Hospital to register there, or if you want to go to CHC, or if you want to try something that isn't in Stanford, because Yale New Haven has sites, and there are other vaccination sites around the area. And well, I know that some people, they're willing to hop in the car and drive a long way.
Oh, they'll go even up to East Hartford. Now, really quick, Mayor, because I know we're running out of time. Do you have to live in Stanford to use Stanford Health, or no?
No, we've made that commitment to the state, is that
okay.
You get us vaccine. You know, I want Stanford residents to be vaccinated, absolutely. And we are actually doing outreach into the black and brown community, who is some of those people are reluctant to get vaccines. So we're trying to reach them and saying, you're eligible. How mm-hmm. can we help you come get a vaccine? But you don't have to live in Stanford. You have to live in Connecticut, though.
Yes.
And
well,
that's true
good.
Of Stanford residents can go to Greenwich, or they can go to, you know, Norwalk or any other place that they want to go as well.
Okay.
In essence, we're trying to be a regional center for mass vaccination. And if you will, there's two prongs. One is the mass vaccinations at Stanford Hospital, the second location that we're pretty much set to go with if we get the vaccine, and CHC on Lord and Taylor. But we also are more outreach, and where we will actually go and hold events. We're setting up an event right now at one of the churches in one of our neighborhoods, a black church, where we believe that with the endorsement of the preacher and the congregation, we can get some of those individuals who might be reluctant mm-hmm. to go to the hospital. Some people just don't want to go to the hospital, period.
Sure, sure.
But if we can overcome that, because that pandemic, that coronavirus, has ravished through some of those communities that
yeah,
are most
absolutely.
Reluctant to come and get the vaccine. And you want to stop this disease, you got to stop it every place. You
mm-hmm.
can't say that, you know, only these people get it or only those people get it. And we're rolling it out, but eventually we want everybody to have this vaccine.
Absolutely. Well, Mayor Martin, we always appreciate checking in with you. Thank you so much, and we'll talk again in a couple of weeks.
And hopefully no snowstorms between now and then.
I'm keeping my fingers crossed. Thanks so much, Mayor Martin. We appreciate it. What do you say we walk on over to Ansonia right now, where Mayor David Cassetti is? And hey, Mayor, how are you this morning?
Good morning. Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you. And yourself?
Very good. Very good.
Good.
Very
I
good.
Mean, y'all are really busy over in Ansonia, huh? You guys
oh,
got
yeah.
some stuff going
on. Oh, yeah.
On. I want to start actually with, you know, we are obviously in February, Black History Month, and
yes.
I know that in Ansonia, you guys are unveiling a new statue. What is it? Why? What's the importance
yes.
of it? Why now?
Well, it's because it's Black History Month. You know, Ansonia has a large population of African Americans here in Ansonia, more than any other valley town. They migrated here from down south back at the turn of the last century. They started families. They worked in our factories and foundries, and I thought it just was fitting. I dedicated the land outside of City Hall to the African-American community here in Ansonia, and I wanted to start with installing statues of prominent leaders in the African-American community here in Ansonia. And this year, I'm starting off with Mr. John Gaddison, Jr., he was the first Afro-American alderman in the city of Ansonia, elected in 1971. And I have a company down in Long Island that I have to give a credit out to Vassal Reichel, who did the Martin Luther King statue. He donated his time to do the clay bust of Mr. Gaddison. And he did a phenomenal job. And I have a company out of Long Island that did the bust. He brought it up here. I looked at it. We're set to set it up and have it unveiled on the 27th of February, the last Saturday. I dedicated the last Saturday in February of every year to be a ceremony for Black History Month.
Oh,
and
that's so cool.
we're also going to be honoring some pastors, Bishop Eugene Redd, Dr. Julian A. Taylor, Dr. V. Loma St. Clair, and Bishop Cleveland Williams will also be honored on that day. Their names are going to be engraved in plaques that we have standing here in City Hall.
So where's the statue going?
The statue's going right in front of City Hall. There's a plot of land in front of City Hall that I dedicated to the African-American community, and statues will go in there. It's right where we have the only bust in the state of Connecticut, a bronze bust, rather, of Martin Luther King in the center. And around that bust, I'm going to put prominent Ansonia African-Americans who made good here in the city through
that.
The years. As long as I'm mayor. I hope future mayors continue it, too. So.
Yeah, I think that's really cool. What have people said about that?
They're very excited. They thought that was a good gesture on my part to do something like that. And you know, there is some naysayers, I'll tell you, but, you know, we're weeding them out.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we have to continue this trend and continue this ceremony every year. Mm-hmm. You know, we also today is another, you know, this week we're going to talk about feel good projects here in Ansonia. We have the Punchki Eating Contest up at the Armory today at 9 o'clock for Fat Tuesday. It's the day before Lent starts, and we're having a contest with that.
So that's happening today?
Yes. Yep.
Love that. Now, where would you say is the best Punchki?
The best Punchki there was, you know, for 2 years there was a hiatus because it came from Eddie's Bake Shop, and Eddie's going out of business. We have no bakery here at Ansonia, but not for long because I'm talking to a lot of bakeries about getting somebody in town here. But he had the best Punchkis, and we're getting them from Big Y in Derby. I tested like 3 different companies out last week, and I came up with Big Y as being the best. So
okay.
We ordered 120 of them.
All right. So you're not messing around.
Oh, no. No, I want feel-good events during these trying times of this pandemic. I want people to enjoy themselves. Also, in March, I'm having Irish Mayor for the Day because Ansonia was predominantly Irish. And I pick a person, it doesn't matter, male or female, to be mayor for the day on St. Patrick's Day, where we raise the Irish flag on our pole. And we honor them with flowers and a lunch.
Now, how do you qualify to become the mayor? That sounds amazing.
Well, that you have to be of Irish descent because it's an Irish holiday.
Of course.
And I basically pick. I go through the roles of seeing who I would like to pick. I usually pick the person.
Wow. All right. So, like, if somebody, like, buys you, you know, let's just say a really good Punchki, is that going to bring them to the front of the list?
Oh, sure. Well, that's the Polish.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, the Polish. Yeah, but it sounds like you like them. So.
Oh, yeah. They're
trying to help
good.
People get ahead.
I only could eat one or two, but there's people that are going to be there today that are going to eat a dozen.
Yeah, I mean, God bless them. That's incredible.
I got certificates for them and everything, and I also got a gift to one of our famous restaurants here in Ansonia, Relish.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic. We are talking to Mayor David Cassetti in Ansonia this morning, and really just some feel-good news, honestly, which we could all use right now. Mayor Cassetti, I had a quick question for you. This is actually kind of a little off-topic, but I was curious to see what your thoughts were on this, so I hope I'm not throwing you off too much. If I am, just tell
me.
That's
no, fine. No problem, Melissa. I'm open to anything.
So I was actually reading an op-ed this morning from a Fairfield resident, and it was interesting because she was talking a little bit about the public hearing coming up later this week on major zoning changes. And consistently we've heard about urban areas versus the suburbs and kind of like, you know, bringing more people into suburbs and changing zoning areas. And I thought, okay, well, Ansonia, you know, is considered a city. And I just was curious what you sort of thought about this. What I thought was interesting is she kind of focused more on the fact that people always think the city, we're going to go into New York City, we're going to go into Boston, and that we haven't really done enough to kind of give more to our cities ultimately. And that's one of the bigger problems. Instead of shuffling people into the suburbs, she was talking about, why aren't we investing more into like our cities in Fairfield and New Haven counties? And I wasn't sure kind of what your thoughts were on that, or if you've weighed in on that conversation and where Ansonia kind of fits in there.
Well, I mean, our zoning laws are pretty stringent. I mean, our lower wards, there's seven wards in Ansonia, and our lower wards, the fifth through the first, are basically multifamily houses. Mm. And the zoning would be different to change it. I mean, we have a big influx over the last year of New Yorkers leaving New York, moving here into Ansonia. The cost of our homes have risen. People are buying houses left and right, and they're all out of state people. So yeah. I don't know. There's something that we have to look into about our zoning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Well, I appreciate you weighing in on that. And I also want to wish you a happy Fat Tuesday. I hope you enjoy.
Thank you too, Melissa.
And we'll be talking again in a couple of weeks.
See you then.
Thank you so much, Mayor Cassetti.
Family, relationships, and personal growth. Professional counselor Julius Dudix is here to help.
Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Julius. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Always love having you on the show. So I wanted to talk to you about something that actually sort of came about during my mini vacation with my family this past week. We were at dinner. And I noticed that there are some members of my family who love to play this game. It's been this way since I was a kid. And it's like, guess how much the bill is, which probably sounds very pretentious. But it's really just more of, I'm one of five kids. My dad always finds it funny, like whenever we're like, oh, let's go out to dinner. And my dad's like, yeah, I'm footing the bill. Yeah. Why don't you guess how much the bill is? I always get so uncomfortable. I hate it. I hate the conversation. I have felt that way since I was 6 years old. I've always found it uncomfortable. My brother finds it funny. My other siblings are fine with it. But I've always been weird about it. And finally, this weekend, we're out to dinner and he goes, all right, who wants to guess the bill? And I was like, I don't. In fact, I want nothing to do with this conversation. And I think my whole family just sat there and they were like, what? Like, where did that come from? And I thought, I have literally in 25 years never loved this game. I hate this game and I'm very uncomfortable. And it actually kind of prompted my question today, which is, I have a feeling, whether it's politics, religion, whether it is just, you know, things that have gone on since your childhood, if there are things that you're uncomfortable with, we are so bad at naturally just saying, hey, you know what? I'm not cool with this, or I'm not comfortable with this. And we don't know how to communicate it effectively where we don't hurt people, but we at least take care of ourselves. So first of all, how common is that for people?
Oh gosh, people are suppressing all kinds of stuff like that. And for you, I think the soda bottle had been shaking for 25 years and the top came off. And that's a very great question. I think people a lot of times are very hesitant to share how they truly feel with other people for fear I'm going to hurt you, so therefore I'm going to suppress my emotions. And consequently, months and years go by, and all of a sudden it just builds up like a volcano, and then it explodes. Mm. So what you're feeling, Melissa, is very common. I think it's a great question. I think there are a lot of people that are going around really not sharing how they really feel with other people. So the question becomes, how do you really do that in an effective way without jeopardizing the relationship? Because for you and for a lot of people, it's not about the money, it's about the relationship. But you wish, you know, for you, I think perhaps maybe relationships mean more than money. And that's why you've got to ask yourself. And I think people begin to, you know, start by asking themselves and being emotionally honest about why they feel the way they feel. And what is prompting this? And is this a real silver bullet issue? And then, Melissa, the other thing is to do it privately, to speak with somebody in a private setting. If something's bothering you that they're doing, the way they're treating your child or the way they're treating somebody else, to pull them aside privately. And I love the verse in Ephesians 4:15 that says, speak the truth in love. So pull somebody aside, and it's about facial expression, body language. I care about the relationship. This is why I'm bringing this up. But do it in a private setting and see where it goes. But it's such a great, great observation that a lot of people wrestle with.
And I wonder too, Julius, if there's a good way to communicate. Like you said, I do like the idea of pulling someone aside and talking to them privately. But I think a lot of times we're more of like the, are we fight or flight? You know, humans either are going to be combative with each other, or they're just going to go sit in a corner or crawl under a rug or hide in their shell, if you will. And they just never say anything. And I just wonder what that does to a relationship when you say nothing and something really does truly bother you.
Yeah, it deteriorates it, because ultimately it's going to manifest in forms of negative behavior. And you've got a crazy Uncle Tony or Aunt Mary or Aunt Linda or whatever, and they're saying things and doing things that cause all kinds of inner stress within you. Mm-hmm. And if you don't talk about it with them or with somebody else at least, and try to develop a plan of how can I better the relationship, it could end up in you drinking too much. It could end up in you, you know, engaging in other forms of negative behavior just to quell the unrest within your own heart. So it's all about being honest with yourself and asking yourself, why do I feel this way? And then how can I salvage the relationship? And the best way to do that is to, again, pull the individual aside, but do it in love. And and don't do it in a point where you're, you know, the volcano's erupting and all of a sudden, you know, there's so much damage that could be done that way. Because that's a detrimental thing, too. If you listen to your anger, you feel yourself getting so frustrated that it just blows up. And if that happens, then you got to revert and say, hey, I'm sorry, but this means a lot to me, kind of thing. But I'm always, you know, you divide and conquer kind of a thing in that way.
Mm-hmm. Talking to Julius Dudix this morning, who's our morning show counselor. And Julius, my example is kind of playful, obviously, and it just sort of sparked the idea that my family is very open. We all are very honest with each other. And and certainly as soon as I said it, you know, my father's like, well, gee, you could have told me that 20 years ago. I would never play that game if you
well,
felt that way.
Go. That's good.
Yeah, no, I mean, and it was, you know, and it really wasn't a very big deal. I don't know really what kind of sparked it to that, you know, at that dinner. I don't know what it was. But I think the other part of this, Julius, which I then had to kind of apologize to my dad for my outburst, if you will, is I think as humans, we always assume that people are mind readers. Could you talk a little bit about the fact that, like, we need to break that barrier of thinking, okay, I visibly don't look comfortable. Do you ever, you know, in my mind, I'm thinking, well, have you ever noticed I never guess? I've never guessed how much the bill is. So, like, has it ever kind of, you know, but I think we always assume that people are like focused on me, 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 me. And really, you know, people aren't mind readers.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a good insight, because those are called false assumptions. We assume people know what we're thinking. And when you hang on to that, man, there's so much anxiety that results. You're thinking the other person, the spouse, the brother, the sibling, the parent, they know what I'm thinking and they understand what I'm thinking, when really the reality is they have not a clue. And so consequently, you go under that false assumption, and all of a sudden it just kind of stirs inside, and then all of a sudden it kind of blows up. But yeah, it's always best to communicate openly, communicate honestly. But the key is to take a step back and ask yourself, why do I feel this way? What's driving me to feel this way? And then you got to look at what really matters in life are relationships. Because ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, it's only the relationships that people remember about your life. And so, it's really important to really communicate and speak that truth in love. And that involves body language. It involves verbiage. It involves just the way that you go about it, your demeanor. I care enough about the relationship to have this conversation with you. And then there are some times when the other person is not going to respond, and you're doing your best to speak the truth in love. And then what you have to do is take a step back and realize that I've got to accept what I can't change about that individual, or it's going to make me crazy and anxious.
And that could be really hard to do as well, Julius. I think there are a lot of big points that you touched on in this. And I think it begs for more explanation and maybe some more tips and guidance on how to do that. So how can people reach out to you directly?
Sure. You can make an appointment at 203-243-7714. Or you can read about me on Facebook or on LinkedIn or www.bark.com.
All right. Simple enough. Thank you so much, Julius. Always appreciate it. And I will be sure to check in with you again next week.
Thank you, Melissa. Have a good day.
Thank you. You too.